Keith, and our good friend joining us this morning is the president and CEO of the Indiana Chamber of Commerce. It's Kevin Brinegar. Kevin, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, gentlemen. I am fabulous.
Happy New Year. Merry everything. We know we're already 9 days in, and it'll be behind us before we know it, but we haven't spoken to you in a bit. Rumor has it you've got a new you're the bionic man now. True or false?
Well, I have a new knee. You've got some good recon going out there, and it's doing real well. Being a good patient, doing the physical therapy, and I'm just about to the point where I'm like prior to the surgery, not in pain every day.
That's fantastic.
A miracle of modern medicine, and I'm looking forward to enjoying the State of the State Day and attending that event tonight and hearing the governor's speech.
Well, let's start there then. Obviously, we've got the short session getting ready to go. It'll kick off tonight, obviously, with Governor Eric Holcomb's speech. What is the chamber hoping to hear from the governor, and what have you kind of put out there hoping that he latches onto? Are we going to get in-depth details tonight? Talk about what this all encompasses as he will give his State of the State address later this evening.
Well, this will be a half-hour televised address, so there's obviously some limitations on that. Decades and decades ago, State of the State used to be an all-afternoon speech from the governor, but it's now a made-for-TV event. And, we'll hear his priorities. He's laid them out pretty well already, so I don't think there'll be any huge surprises. But focusing on revamping some of the workforce training programs, and there's a pretty major bill that Representative Todd Houston has put out, House Bill 1002, on that. Continuing to fight the opioid crisis will be a priority. There's a technology initiative on software as a service, trying to clarify whether that's taxable or not. And obviously our position is that services aren't taxed in Indiana, so these cloud-based services should not be either. That's real important to the technology community around the state. We're also hoping that he and the General Assembly begin to get serious about our poor healthcare metrics compared to other states, particularly, obviously, opioid is front and center, but there are 10 times more Hoosiers die each year from smoking-related illnesses and diseases than there are opioids. And we need to keep that in mind, plus smoking-related deaths are the most preventable of any. And so we've got some initiatives working with our hospital association and state medical association and others in what we call the Alliance for a Healthier Indiana that include raising the legal age of smoking from 18 to 21. Five states have now done that. And the vast majority of people who smoke throughout their entire lives started before age 21. And if we raise it to 21, we get the cigarettes out of high schools. We get beyond the time which most people start. And as I've traveled around the state this summer and fall, I've asked the question, how many of you have children under the age of 21? Usually 40-50% of the hands raised. So how many of you want them to be lifelong smokers, and not a single hand stays up? So I said, well, then let's join together and encourage the legislature to raise the smoking age.
Kevin, there are a couple of issues that are out there that are talked about every day, one of which right now that's getting a lot of the news is the cold beer and beer sales and stuff on Sunday. Does the chamber have a position on that?
We do, and we just adopted it this fall at our fall board of directors meeting. We have a position supporting legalizing alcohol sales on Sundays for the convenience of customers. A lot of people, in fact, Sunday is the biggest grocery shopping day of the week, and it just makes sense that people should be allowed to purchase their 12-pack of beer or their bottle of wine there and not have to do it on a separate day. Indiana is the only state that doesn't allow retail outlets to sell on Sunday. We're also the only state in the country that regulates the temperature of beer, which is frankly a little crazy. And by that I mean that some retailers can sell cold beer, i.e. liquor stores, and other retailers cannot. And it really doesn't make a lot of sense. If you're licensed to sell and you're regulated to sell beer, you ought to be able to sell it at whatever temperature you want. I'm very confident that Sunday sales is going to pass this year. I'm less sure about the cold beer sales. And I think if, citizens, voters, constituents want the ability to do that at any licensed retail outlet, then they're going to have to communicate hard to the legislature, because I don't think they're quite there yet.
Do you think this is a domino effect? Let's do one, then the next one will fall after that. Is it easier to do it piecemeal than it is to wipe it all out at once from a political thing? Can you say, hey, look, we'll give you another year or two on the cold sales. You trade us for the Sunday sales.
But the liquor stores have the lobby.
That's what I'm asking. I don't know.
Well, I think that remains to be seen. That could be one scenario where the cold beer sales is maybe phased in over time. It certainly makes more sense to do it all at once, because it's the same general issue area. But the liquor store lobby has acquiesced to Sunday sales, but said in return, we want to continue to be the exclusive seller of cold beer, and that's kind of their holy grail. And I understand that. I understand that there's a lot of money that's been invested in licenses, that's the system that the state set up after Prohibition. Frankly, it doesn't make a lot of sense to give the licenses, actually give them to the owners and let them pass them down or sell them on a kind of a underground market. For that, the state arguably should maintain possession of those licenses, and when that person, owner, no longer wants to operate that business, then the license arguably ought to go back to the state, not have them allowed to sell it for tens or hundreds of thousands of dollars.
One of the other issues, in interest of full disclosure, I'm on the local school board here, and mm-hmm. there's a lot of talk about regulating when schools can start. They can't start before a certain time. Does the chamber have any stand on that particular item?
We do. We think that ought to be a local decision.
Thank you.
I'm a former school board member myself, and sat on the calendar committee, which is a group of administrators and teachers and parents trying to work out what is the best calendar to meet the requirements of the 180 instructional days, but also meet local needs. And I think particularly now that we've got a number of schools, including the district where I live and my children graduated from, are on either year-round or balanced calendars.
Right.
You know, they start early, then they have 2 weeks off in the fall, 2 weeks at Christmas, 2 weeks at spring break, but start in around August 1st. That's a local decision that's been made with the eye towards what's best academically for the students. And then to come in with a state law that says you can't start school until after Labor Day, and it really just arguably doesn't make sense and doesn't recognize the needs of the local community. There are some communities that, like Speedway, where they need the kids out of school Memorial Day, because a number of them work at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway.
Right.
Whereas others, may want a later start date in the fall because of, summer activities, amusement parks or whatever that are in their community, like Indiana Beach or Holiday World. And they ought to have the option to start later if they so choose.
One of the other
that's our position in some.
Okay. One of the other issues now for schools is mandatory computer kinds of classes, those kinds of things. Mm-hmm. That's really a simplistic way of saying it. Are you in that one too?
We are. We think that the schools and the state should move in the direction. It is so, technology is so pervasive and so important in the workplace these days that we'd like to see schools moving in the direction of offering computer science courses. And by that, I mean things like, well, it could be coding, but I'm really thinking about things like Microsoft Office products, you know, how to do a how to put the PowerPoint together, how to use an Excel spreadsheet, you know, how to use Outlook, you know, some of the basic things, and get kids exposed to that, because they're going to need that, in both if they go on to college and in the world of work, and technology is so pervasive, even in manufacturing. I mean, you go, I went to the GE Aviation plant, the new plant up in Lafayette, where they're making jet engines. And, you know, they're producing these gigantic jet engines. There are machines and technical systems everywhere. And the day shift of that plant only had 40 employees. But the 40 employees were highly trained, highly technical individuals who were running and monitoring the machines and the equipment that were actually making the components for this jet engine.
And Kevin, moving forward here, it is the short session, the legislative session. Tell us about how the schedule is going to work and why this is different. Obviously, the budget's the longer session. We don't have a budget to worry about. But tell us how we should be keeping up with this and when things should be happening.
Well, the session actually began Wednesday of last week. And those 2 days were committed to, you have to introduce bill. They have to be assigned to committee. The introduction is called first reading. If the bill goes through committee and back to the floor of either the House or Senate, there's a day when anyone can offer amendments to that bill. That's called second reading. And then the final vote is third reading. And that has to happen, that process has to happen in both houses. So the bill introduction deadline was Friday. And now we're starting to see committees meet. Committee chairmen are deciding that out of all the bills that are assigned to the committee, which ones they want to give a hearing to, which ones they want to take testimony on and take a vote on. And so the committee process will be starting. Bills will have to clear their house of origin by roughly the end of January. So, just in another 2.5 weeks or so. Then the bills that make it through that hurdle will go to the second house, and in the month of February, the Senate will be dealing with House bills that have passed. The House will be dealing with Senate bills that will have passed. Then in March, roughly, we'll have about 2 weeks for conference committees where they attempt to work out the differences between the House passed and Senate passed versions. And then no later than March 14th, they'll have to adjourn sine die, which means for good. And this 2018 legislative session will be over. So it's like a train that is speeding rapidly down the track. And it's fast paced. We've got the state address tonight. I'm looking forward to attending that. I had the privilege of being invited by Speaker Brian Bosma to sit in one of his tweet seats. So I'll be tweeting about the governor's speech and about the whole experience.
Well, where can we follow you on Twitter? Let's get the important stuff out there.
Yeah, go to IndianaChamber.com. Twitter feed, and you'll see my tweets. But it's a very special event. It's one of only two times a year that the House and Senate meet together jointly. The second time will be tomorrow afternoon when they hear Chief Justice Loretta Rush give the State of the Judiciary address. And so you've got all the legislators there. You've got the governor representing the executive branch. And then up in the gallery, you've got the members of the Supreme Court and the appellate court sitting with some other invited guests and statewide office holders. So you've got essentially all of the state government in one place sitting in the House chamber listening to the governor's address. And I've had the privilege of sitting in person on the State of the State a number of times over the years that I've been chamber president, and it's really a thrilling event.
Kevin, one of the things that's kind of going on in the background, and I see it come up every so often, and that's redistricting in the state of Indiana. Where's the chamber on those kinds of issues?
Well, the Constitution, the Indiana Constitution, gives the General Assembly the authority to draw legislative and congressional districts. And So there's some efforts to say, well, let's have an independent commission. But then when you look at how those bills are written, you've got legislators appointing them and the governor appointing the members of that commission. So how independent are they if, you know, I've been appointed by Senator so-and-so, I'm going to be kind of beholden to Senator so-and-so. I saw an article over the weekend that suggested that there are the couple bills that have been filed are not likely to go anywhere. And it's hard for me to imagine the General Assembly giving up its constitutional authority to draw maps and say, okay, I'm now in a safe Democrat district, you know, maybe in Bloomington, Indiana. Do I want to vote and let some a group of strangers, draw maps that maybe now I'm not in a safe district, maybe I'm in a very competitive district, or maybe now I'm in a Republican district? I think it's hard for them to pull the trigger on that unless and until there is such a huge groundswell of voter demand for it. I think that's what it's going to take. And there are some movements there. In the week, my next-door neighbor is very involved in the League of Women Voters, and they're trying to drum up support for that. But I just absolutely don't see it happening this legislative session.
What's the number one issue that the chamber wants to get through this assembly?
We want to continue with legislation to revamp our workforce training program to make them more demand-driven, by that meaning responsive to the needs, the training needs of employers. And we're optimistic that working with Representative Houston and others that we'll get that done and move in that direction, because workforce is head and shoulders the number one issue and concern and challenge that employers in Indiana are facing. There just are not enough people with the requisite skills to fill the jobs that exist today or the job needs of the future to allow our employers to be competitive in the global marketplace. And it's a real challenge. And we've got some counties in Indiana that their unemployment rate is less than 2%. As I traveled around the state this summer and fall, I saw two instances of factories that had signs out front that said, "Now hiring, we do not drug test." And that's actually kind of a scary thought, but that's an indication of how desperate they are for people looking to fill a job. And the opioid crisis is contributing very, very negatively to this problem, because we have people out there that have the skills to fill jobs but are so addicted to opioids that they can't function on a daily basis to successfully work and fill those jobs.
Kevin, you've also talked about on this program before, when we were talking last fall, about tolls and toll roads and everything else like that. Is that kind of off the radar right now? Where are we there?
Well, we're waiting commission, but I'm not sure that's the right word. The research that the governor has commissioned on what kind of revenue could be generated from tolling different interstates across Indiana has been completed. It's now up to the governor. The General Assembly gave the governor the authority to decide which, if any, of those roads they want to toll, and understand that we're not just talking about adding tolls to existing roads and not doing anything to those existing roads. We're only talking about tolling in the context of adding additional lanes to those roads. So taking I-65 and I-70 in particular and taking those from four lanes to six lanes. And then using the toll money to pay for that major project of adding an additional lane, you know, all the way through the state. Additionally, even whatever the governor determines has to be, as I understand it, has to be approved by the Federal Highway Department.
Okay.
So this is a long way off. It's far from a done deal. But the problem is, even with the major transportation infrastructure funding that the General Assembly passed last year, that doesn't come anywhere near close to generating the kind of revenue that would be needed to do a massive project like, you know, taking I-65, and making it six lanes throughout the entire state, or I-70, which we think is desperately needed. If you drive those highways, there is so much traffic on there, both cars and semis, that it's a white knuckle experience. And it's particularly noteworthy because we just did a family vacation between Christmas and New Year's down to a cabin in the mountains of northern Georgia. And, from Indianapolis to Louisville is just two lanes, except for a little bit around Greenwood. But then you get south of Louisville, and everything's six lanes down through Louisville and Tennessee. And it makes a huge difference on the ease of driving and the flow of the traffic when you've got that third lane versus only having two.
Oh, I don't disagree with any of that. It's just how we're going to pay for it is always the literal million-dollar, well, sometimes billion-dollar question with that.
Kevin, well, when we're talking about these kind of projects, you're talking about hundreds of billions, tens of billions of dollars at least. Now, one of the appeals about the tolling is that 40% of the traffic that drives on our interstates comes from out of state. So it gives you the ability to sort of export the cost of improving the roads here in Indiana.
Interesting.
Kevin, one of the issues has been ongoing in Indiana is the whole issue with the State Board of Education, the Superintendent of Public Instruction, some of the things that are coming out of that office. And the chamber has been fairly vocal on some of that. Where are we now?
Well, we support and the State Board has adopted the graduation pathways, which is really intended to give students and families additional ways to obtain the high school diploma, different pathways, some of them more workforce-oriented rather than college-bound. There are logistics involved in making sure that every school district can have those options available to students, and that has to play out. I was frankly surprised by the opposition from some educators, but I understand it was more, as I peeled the onion back, it was more logistically based of, we don't have this kind of teacher, or we're not sure that we can do this under what timetable. I was also very surprised that Superintendent McCormick voted for the pathways recommendation at the committee level, which she served on, but then with no amendments to the proposal. It was the exact same proposal that got to the State Board of Education. She voted against it. So some inconsistency there from our state superintendent, but I guess maybe that's indicative of how complicated and maybe a little bit controversial that this proposal is. But we think in the long run, having different ways to earn a high school diploma will increase our graduation rates and be helpful to more students.
Amen.
We're also encouraged by legislation that passed last year that is going to provide every school district with what's called a career explorer opportunity where students can take an assessment of what their interests and what their aptitudes are in the eighth grade before they get into high school and know what their, perhaps their best path and course is during high school and after high school, and help them establish their high school courses that they're going to take in the path so that they'll be better prepared for work and further study after high school. And we think that that's going to be very helpful to providing, getting more students into post-secondary training or college or other things that will make them stronger economically and make our state stronger economically.
Exactly right. And the more you can get on board, the better. And making that possible is key. Enjoy your front row seat tonight. We'll see you on the Twitterverse, and we'll check in with you next month to see how everything's rolling along. How's that sound?
That sounds great. It's always a pleasure and enjoyable to visit with you and your listeners and talk to the folks back in my hometown, and we appreciate your interest in the important public policy discussions that are going on at the state capitol.
Tis the season. Make sure that knee's better. Remember, you have to have patience to be a good patient.
Yeah.
So, all right, Kevin, thanks for your time. We appreciate it.
My pleasure.
Kevin Brinegar, President and CEO of the Indiana Chamber of Commerce. Checking with him about once a month when the legislation's
going great.
On. Yeah, you want to know what's happening? There you go. You get a little detail there. If you caught us throughout the middle of the conversation or the interview and you want to hear more, no problem. We'll have it posted this morning at WGCLradio.com. We thank J&S Locksmith for being with us. You'll find everything for the residential and commercial outdoor technician. J&S Locksmith, 508 West 17th Street here in Bloomington. Do they have a fog blower down there, Keith? Maybe a snow blower or two? Oh, well, they've got everything down
there.
It's
not moving.
Go by and say hi. I can see a little bit farther. I always get farther. Those two. Farther than the church. You can see almost a half a block over. That's the good news. As I mentioned, I traded text messages with our good friend Adam Wason, the Public Works Director. Director of Public Works Department. He said roads are fine. He said his crews aren't reporting any issues, so that's something good. That's a good problem to have this morning. We'll keep an eye on the fog.